Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Thought Grenades with Robert Thompson and Mike Neese on Blog Talk Radio. Robert is the author of The Offsite, Leadership Challenge Babel, and the founder of LeaderInsideOut.com.
And welcome once again to Thought Grenades with Robert Thompson and host Mike Neese. This is Monday, January 12, 2015, brand new year. This is Robert Thompson coming to you live from the beautiful San Francisco Bay, as we do each and every Monday, more than not, at 10 a.m. Pacific time. And joining me from the shores of what might be the set of Frozen is my good friend and co-host Mike Neese. Mike, how are you doing? Are you thawing out a bit?
Oh, absolutely. I've got the flip-flops ready to go.
That's good. We've got a great show once again today. Gary Ginard, he's the author of Fearless Speaking. He joins us to kick off our, and I know you know this, but it's our fifth year of doing Thought Grenades. Unbelievable. Gary's going to help us all beat our anxiety, build our confidence, and change our life, which we can all use for brand new 2015. Folks, if you need to eliminate your fear of public speaking forever, if that's the case, stick around. You won't want to miss this show. And if you have a question or a thought to share, please call in at 347-989-0965. That number again is 347-989-0965. And, of course, never miss a session by subscribing to Thought Grenades on iTunes. That way Mike and I are right there on your mobile device. If you're looking for something practical, simple, and effective, I think this is the place. Gary, it's good to have you on. Thanks for taking the time to be with us this brand new year.
Well, thank you so much, Robert and Mike. It's an honor to be your inaugural show in 2015.
That's it. We're starting it off with getting rid of our anxiety and building our confidence, and damn it, we're going to change our life. Here we go. So talk to us about fearless speaking, because, you know, people always say, you know, and I'm sure Mike gets this too, they go, how do you do it? How do you get up in front of a group so often and feel so comfortable and so on? And we have to share with them that, you know, it's not always like that. Sometimes there's an audience that, you know, maybe that day we're just not feeling it, or we jump up on stage and, you know, maybe we just don't connect. And so we go through it, and it's tough. So it's tough for everyone. So how can we overcome, how can we get our listeners to overcome any fear that has anything to do with jumping up and starting off a presentation?
I think that the most important thing to bear in mind is a very simple idea. It's sometimes hard to get in our head, but when we think about what we're there to do when we speak to an audience, whether it's just a couple of people or 1,000 people or even millions if we appear on in broadcast mediums, is that we're there not for ourselves but for the audience's benefit. And we tend to kind of direct our energy at ourselves and think about how we're doing, and we forget that the people are there for what they're going to get out of what we're talking about. And if we just turn that focus and that energy around and place it on the audience rather than ourselves, then we lift a huge weight off our shoulders, and then we can focus on what we're supposed to be doing and start to enjoy it.
I think you have to go into that process of enjoying, right? I mean, if you don't enjoy what you're talking about, then perhaps you're not passionate about it. And if you're not passionate about it, why are you up there talking about it?
What the audience wants, of course, is us. The reason that we're talking is most likely because we're just the right person to be discussing this idea or vision or product or service or whatever we're talking about. And that's all the audience wants. They really want us. And sometimes we feel that we need to do something that we're not doing, or we need to be better than we are. And when we get into that mode of thinking, what happens, of course, is that we're not ourselves. And then we're not as conversational. Our body language, our vocal delivery, everything about us isn't really who we are. And so the audience, I think, kind of senses that. And they also sense, of course, when we're not enjoying ourselves. And let's face it, if it's not enjoyable for us, it's probably not going to be for the audience, and vice versa.
Sure. Right. So how do we get, you know, there's a ton of folks listening who are thinking, you know, before I go into a conference and I'm going to speak, or before I go in to talk in front of my colleagues, you know, a little voice goes off in my head and it says, you know, what are you doing? Why are you even doing this? It's such a negative thing that that little voice does to us. How do we overcome negative thoughts before a speech or presentation?
It's a process called cognitive restructuring, and just as it sounds, it's restructuring our cognition or our thinking. And one of the ways that we do this is to pay a little attention to what's called worst-case thinking, because we tend to do that. And we imagine the worst thing happening that could possibly happen, and we also imagine people judging us negatively, which isn't the case at all, because audiences are always in a what's in it for me mode. They really sincerely would like to get something constructive and have their time be well spent being there. So the audience is really on our side, and you know that when a speaker or a performer of any kind is failing in front of an audience, we feel bad. We don't feel good about it. So to start to realize that the worst thing is not going to happen, and what is more likely to happen is something positive, then we start to reshape our thinking and get out of that, both that worst case thinking and the negative self-talk, and try to move that into positive territory.
Gary, I certainly agree with that, and I wonder, if indeed the audience, as I believe they do, wants us to succeed, what do I actually do as a speaker to tap into that energy? I mean, how do I tap into that energy that they have for me?
Well, that's a great way to put it. It's tapping into the energy of the audience, and it, more than anything, has to do with paying attention to what's happening in the room and how the audience is responding. We always think in terms of body language, about our own body language, and we forget that a good talk or presentation isn't a monologue, it's a dialogue. And we, as the speaker, may be the one who is speaking out loud, but the audience is speaking pretty loudly and clearly, too. It's silent, but their body language is telling us a lot in terms of whether they're attentive, whether they're focused on what we're saying, whether they're still with us or they're starting to zone out because we've lost them. And if we pay attention to that rather than, as it were, looking at ourselves and our own performance, if we look carefully at what's happening with the audience, we place a couple of interesting things happen. One is that we place ourselves in the present moment rather than being divorced from it. And if we're watching what's happening with the audience, we can stay attuned with them. And if they're still with us, we can expand or continue to discuss what we're discussing in the way that we're discussing it. And if we notice that something has happened and they're not with us anymore, that's a pretty good signal that we should do something different. Perhaps bring in an illustration or a story where we may have been speaking mostly theoretically, or if we've been showing PowerPoint slide after PowerPoint slide, perhaps it's time to get out of the PowerPoint and have a discussion, more of a discussion with the audience. So if we're doing these things, then we are getting on the wavelength of our listeners, which is a very nice place to be. And when we get there, we feel a lot better about it. It's simply a better place to be in rather than looking at ourselves critically. And then we get back to what we were saying a couple of minutes ago about enjoying the situation.
Yes, very good.
Now, you mentioned PowerPoint, Gary, and of course it can be death to most presentations these days because people don't know how to actually be brief on PowerPoint. Steve Jobs, you know, has been a big help for me in his work. And Carmine Gallo, who's a guest on the show a couple of times a year, he talks about this as well, the brevity. What do you suggest for PowerPoint? Turn it off or use it in what way? How can we get people to stop putting so many bullet points on each slide?
I think both of those things you said just now, one turn it off and one to use it differently. The way that Steve Jobs used PowerPoint was interesting because he would focus on the image. There were, if you go online and type in Steve Jobs and any of his presentations, or go to YouTube and see any of his presentations, you'll notice that very often it will just be an image on the screen,
right,
an iPhone or an iPad, and he'll talk about that. You don't see text on the screen, which really is not interesting because PowerPoint is a visual medium. It's not a literary medium. So the more that we can think in terms of using images rather than words, bullet points and words, the more powerful that PowerPoint will be. Also, the making your story paramount and allowing the visual components that you're bringing in to reinforce the narrative that you're talking about is part of what I call performing PowerPoint, and makes it far more interesting for the audience. And third, you can do what I do and tell my the people I coach and the groups that I train about the B button. And most people don't know this, but when you're in the view mode of PowerPoint and you hit the B on the keyboard, all the screens where that PowerPoint is showing at the moment go to black. And you can also hit the W button, which goes to white. And when you hit either of those buttons again, you come right back to where you were in the presentation. I think this is an extremely important function of PowerPoint, because if you are, as I said a couple of minutes ago, paying attention to the audience and you see that you've been showing too many PowerPoint slides and they don't seem engaged anymore, hit that B button, and as soon as the screen goes to black, guess where everybody looks? Right back at the speaker. So you have, this is a perfect tool to engage them again when they have become disengaged. And then when you feel it's an opportune moment to go back to the PowerPoint, just hit that B button again. And I tell the people that I work with, I don't think you should go any more than 20 minutes at the very most in a PowerPoint presentation without hitting the B button. But when I use it in a presentation, I probably use it about every 5 minutes, because I'm always concerned that there's a discussion going on and something is taking place that's exciting and interesting and in the moment in that room, rather than people sitting passively while a lot of PowerPoint slides just wash over them and they don't have to do anything or be part of the discussion.
Well, I think that's true, Gary. And I think also going back to the theme of your book, I mean, for people that are fearful of speaking, PowerPoint can actually become a crutch that they lean upon. I mean, I can take the audience right out of it if I just pay attention to my PowerPoint. It's almost something to lean on, if that makes sense.
It is, and it can be. And one of the ways that we can help lessen our fear of speaking is, in fact, to use visual aids of any kind, not just PowerPoint. Because if we have extreme fear of speaking, if you show something like a PowerPoint slide or a flip chart or anything else, people's attention will go to that visual, because the visuals are so much more seductive than what they are hearing vocally. And that can help if you absolutely want to get their attention off you for a short period of time. But, of course, the more that amount of time goes on, the less influence you have and the less you become the influencer in the room.
I wonder,
which ain't
too.
Good.
I wonder, too, again, thinking about the premise and knowing a little bit about your background, the premise of your book, with your acting background, is there a similarity between acting and presenting a speech? I mean, do I get into a role as a presenter just as I would as an actor?
There is a very, very strong correlation or similarity between an acting performance and a public speaking performance. In
okay.
fact, I believe that there is only one instance where they're not really similar, and that is that in an acting performance you play another character, and in a speech or presentation you are yourself.
Mm.
But absent that one item or that one particular, they are virtually similar because in either case you're standing in front of an audience, you're speaking, you're taking part in oral communication, you're in a performance in what I call the performance arena, and you are trying to move an audience with you. You are trying to get an audience to think, feel, or do what you want them to, and bring them along with you from point A to point B to point C. And if you think about it, that's exactly what an actor does, and an actor uses the very same tools that a speaker needs to use: the body, the voice, facial expressions, eye contact, proximity to the audience, and the sense that there is a shared communication, and also a revealing and of emotions and working on an emotional level, because that is so important to get people to buy into what you are showing them, whether it's a stage performance or a film performance or a performance as a speaker.
Right. Makes sense.
You know, Gary, yeah, it really does. There's the only issue that I've got with that is that I think some people mistake that acting for trying to be somebody else. Do you find that in the people you coach? Do they come across trying to be, you know, I'm going to act like someone else so that I can be that person that I think I should be up there on stage instead of being the authentic of who I am? That makes sense?
It does, yeah. I think that it's not so much trying to be someone else as it is trying to be as good as someone else. So the people still speak as themselves, but they think, oh, I would like to be as good as Robert Thompson or Mike Neeson, and I've seen these guys speak, and they're fantastic, so I'd like to be that good. So then they try to imitate or emulate, and of course, the more that anyone does something like that, the less authentic they are. And what I work with them on is to try to understand that there's usually a considerable distance that any of us can go from where we are to where we can be at our best. Not to be someone else, because if I tried to be either of you, I would fail. But if you tried to be me, the same thing would happen. So where are we as a speaker, as a communicator, and where can we be individually? Let's get ourselves up to that level, however much that distance, however far that distance is, and do the very best that we are capable of. And that's probably going to be pretty successful for the audience, because the audience understands that you can't be Steve Jobs or someone else, nor would they want you to be. The chances are very good that you have something terrific to tell them and to share with them. And when that sharing goes on by us trying to be at our best rather than someone else's best, then it's a much more positive situation.
So what you're telling me, Gary, is I shouldn't wear the black turtleneck and jeans every time I speak. I'm not going to be considered Steve Jobs. Huh? That's just not going
to happen. No, and I'm afraid that the 10 pairs of outfits that you bought that look like that, they're not going to get as much use.
All right.
Yeah.
So I used to pretend I was Mike too. So. I don't do that anymore.
Well, I'll tell you, if you're gonna do that Jobs thing, I'd also suggest you stop mentioning PowerPoint. But that's all right.
Yeah, Keynote would be the preferred apparatus. Yeah, Gary, you know, the one thing I like about your book, although the cover kind of scares me because all these people have this fear on it, is you have exercises in there for folks. Why don't you take us through a few of them, like, you know, the top five things? I know it's kind of a difficult question because it depends on what issues people bring to it. But give us a sense of the, you know, five or so exercises that you would have us do to become better speakers and to get rid of the fear.
Oh, sure. The cover that you mentioned, we liked when the designer gave us five possibilities, and this was the fifth one. And by the time we got to the fifth one, we were scrolling on our screen, and by the time we got to this one, we both laughed, and we thought this is great because it's kind of almost a cartoon of people being scared about speaking. So we thought it was a lot of fun. As you say,
it looked
there
like actually
are
some of the audiences I've dealt with.
It looked like that.
It looks like some audiences going, "Oh my God!" Did you just say
that?
No. Go ahead. Sorry.
As you say, there are a lot of exercises. There are actually 50 exercises, and the reason that I wrote the book is because I wanted it to be hands-on, and I wanted it to be as practical as possible, because as an actor, mm-hmm. I'm always about getting up and getting on stage and actually performing. So mm-hmm. there are many exercises which approach the speaking fear and the anxiety over speaking from a number of different angles. If I were to name a few, one of the ones that you already mentioned or we talked about is the overcoming worst case thinking and the negative self-talk. There's an exercise there to understand what you've been saying in your own head that's been counterproductive to you, and to turn those remarks that you're making into positive territory. There's some wonderful exercises in here on grounding and learning how to be stable in terms of where you place your feet and getting energy from the floor, from the earth, which is something that actors are very attuned to, and it's a good way to make yourself feel physically stronger as a speaker. We have an exercise on taking just 5 minutes and sitting down and working on your visualization and your focus so that you can begin to, as I jokingly say, exercise the focus muscle in your brain, to the horror of neurologists everywhere, that so that you can learn not to listen to the intrusive thinking and the thoughts that happen and pop into your head while you're speaking, so that you can just let them, as it were, float away, so you can get back to the message that you're here to deliver and how it's getting across. I have an exercise here called the Two Universes, which is, and there's actually an illustration in the book in which we go from putting ourselves at the center of the universe as though we were the sun to putting the audience there. So we understand that the reason that we're there is for the audience's benefit, and to start thinking about them rather than ourselves. And then the last exercise that I would mention is an exercise which has to do with breathing. It's called calming the heart. And that's very important, because one of the biggest problems with speech anxiety is the physiological effects of adrenaline and the rapid pounding heart rate, shallow, rapid breathing, all of which makes us feel even worse. So we get into a negative cycle rather than a positive cycle physically. So here, this is an exercise for breathing with the diaphragm, to breathe a little more deeply, a little more slowly, and to actually calm the heart and slow the heart rate down, so you don't feel, literally, you don't feel as bad, and you feel you're in a much more secure place.
Sure. Those are all good. I like the calming heart one, because I think that's huge. No matter how often you do these things, I think there's always, I think there should be some, stress a little bit about, positive stress. I'm going to get up
Absolutely.
In front of these people, and I'm going to start spewing off all of this information. And I'm a little nervous about it. And if you're not nervous, I think, you're, I don't know, maybe dead. I heard a story a long time ago. I have no idea if it's true, but I was told that it was Merv Griffin, who, before every show, he went on the air, he vomited because he was so nervous. Now, this is a guy that's been on stage or on the radio or whatever for, you know, 1,000 years, but yet every time he was to go perform, he was sick. Now, I don't think anyone wants to do that, but it tells you that people that are really good out there, you know, there's some nervousness before they jump up on stage. Am I correct here?
Absolutely, and he's not the only one. I mean, there are other famous people who actually do throw up before they go on stage. Again, that's, as you say, that's not something that we want to do. But a certain level of activation and nervousness that the normal butterflies in the belly is actually beneficial, because it gets us psyched up for the big game, and it also makes us do our homework because we want to look good up there. And if we were completely mellow and told ourselves we didn't have anything to worry about, we were going to be fantastic, chances are we wouldn't be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. That's an interesting concept. Gary, how do people, we've got a few minutes left, I've got a couple other questions. How do people get a hold of you for a coaching assignment if they would like you to coach them, or just to get the book? Why don't you share your website?
Well, thank you. The website is GennardMethod.com. That's G-E-N-A-R-D Method.com. And on the, as far as the book is concerned, your listeners could go to FearlessSpeakingBook.com. And on that, that's the book site. And on that site, there's a video of me. There's more information on the book. And people can download a free chapter of Fearless Speaking and see if they like the book, and take a look at the table of contents and see what's in there and whether they think it'd be helpful for them.
No, I'm sure. Of course. I'm sure it would be. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say the book is also available on the store page of our site, GennardMethod.com, and it's also available on Amazon, of course, as a paperback and an ebook.
Okay. That's great, and yeah, it's definitely a book that if you stand up in front of people at any time in your career, whether it's colleagues or a room of 1,000 people, you need to read this book. Mike, you have a question?
Yeah, just one last one from me. Now that we've got an expert on here, I've always wanted to ask this question. So Gary, can we put the advice about seeing the audience's naked bed forever now?
Well, that's an interesting way to put it, Mike. Can we put the audience naked to bed? Okay.
Wait a minute. Yeah, that didn't come out right, did it?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And as I say, I don't know about you, but for me to imagine the audience in their underwear or naked is not going to do a lot for my concentration or my focus on my message.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, I'm not even going to touch that one. Listen, I have one more question for you. Yeah, Gary, I'm going to move you off that topic totally. We only have about a couple of minutes, so just a few words from you. What book, you know, you talk about fearless speaking, changing lives. What book changed yours?
Wonderful question. The books that really were most influential to me, and I should explain that I did my acting training in this country and at one of the acting academies in London, the Webber Douglas Academy of Dramatic Art, before I moved to New York and started acting professionally on stage. And the books that were most influential to me, and I think are the most powerful books regarding an actor and his or her performances, are by someone named Cicely Berry, C-I-C-E-L-Y, Berry, B-E-R-R-Y. She's still around. She's in her 80s now. She, for decades now, she has been the voice coach of the Royal Shakespeare Company in England. And she has some amazing things to say, not only for actors, but for anyone who speaks, regarding how language affects audiences, FX audiences, and how we can use language to tap into the power of that words possess in terms of moving people. And she's a wonderful, she's a genius in this area, and I think she's well worth reading if you have any interest in knowing how to move people and make your message as powerful as it can be.
All right, we have to leave it there. Folks listening live, we'll talk to you next couple of weeks. Gary, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. Really appreciate it.
Robert and Mike, it's been an absolute pleasure, and have a great 2015. I'll be listening to your show. I think it's terrific.
Thanks,
thank you, and we'll get back to you, bring you back from time to time. Take care, Gary.
So long now.
So long. Mike, next week, listen, I know that it's been tough after I'm taking a month off, but next week we'll take another week off in honor of Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. But folks, we'll be back January 26th with best-selling author Anne Handley. Her new book, Everybody Writes, is a runaway success, according to the Wall Street Journal. You won't want to miss this show. This is Robert Thompson from Mike Nies. Thanks for listening to Thought Grenades for Monday, January 12, 2015.
Thanks for listening to Thought Grenades with Robert Thompson and Mike Nies. Catch us live every Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific on Blog Talk Radio, or listen anytime you wish on iTunes.